Hi, this is Chris Evans, recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week, I'm here with Martin. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sweating a little bit. I don't know about you, but yeah, other than that, pretty good.
It's a good job it's not video then, isn't it?
It is a great thing it's not video. I've always said that I've got the face for podcasting, definitely. So this week, we have a guest. We have Scott Shadley. Scott, you work for NGD Systems, that's correct?
That is correct. It's nice to have a chance to talk with you both, Chris and Martin. Glad to meet you, and hopefully you get to stay a little cooler later this week.
Absolutely. So do you want to tell us what you do with the company? And then that'll probably help inform exactly where we're headed in this discussion.
Absolutely. So I recently joined NGD Systems as the VP of Marketing and Product Technologist for our computational storage solutions. Talking about storage is now my favorite thing to do.
Today's conversation really is talking about the edge. And I think this podcast will probably be titled Storage on the Edge, which sounds like storage is like a bit panicky and it's about to, you know, jump off the top of a building or something like that. But we don't mean it like that. We mean storage on the edge of the network, storage on the edge in terms of IoT and edge computing. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how on earth do you manage storage that's sitting out at the edge of your network when it's not all in the data center and you're not all managing it locally. Scott, why don't you just start us off and give us what you think we mean by that whole edge thing, and how is it different from what we might have been doing, say, 10 to 15 years ago?
Yeah, so from a perspective of storage and moving into this concept of edge, and even as some people have now called it fog computing, the idea is instead of everything being so centralized in a cloud or a local co-location, private public footprint, we've got applications and we've got targeted products that are being further and further placed away from those localized centers. So that's our edge computing. You can think of it as autonomous cars, all kinds of data and sensor, applicable information, people that are trying to gather images from different video capture techniques for retail, let alone security and things like that. And that's really where the edges come into play, because now with all that data being generated, we need something to do about managing it in place instead of constantly migrating it to a localized storage spot. So almost as if we're migrating the brains or the hubs of a supercomputer out to many different tendrils or nodes instead of keeping it central in the brain.
If I think about how that might have looked, say, 15, 20 years ago, I would have said we sort of had this sort of stuff there previously. So if you look at any retail organization, if you look at maybe banks, they would have had a distributed computing model where they would have had things in different branches and there would have been a certain degree of processing. We've sort of moved on from that. We're not talking about that now, are we? We're talking about a different type of data, a much more dynamic, perhaps machine-generated type data. So I think the actual focus of what that data is different, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Because historically, like you said, we've had these big mainframe systems and all of the intelligence or the processing power was in a central spot. So you always had to migrate to where the brain was. And what we're really doing is moving that compute capability to each of these localized spaces. So if you look at the banking example, everybody had nice little VAX systems or something similar to that that were attached to a brain somewhere else. And there's always a wire connecting them and there's no localized compute. So as long as your speed was efficient, you could process a simple application or accept money. But then, of course, you put it on a retainer for 48 hours until you could actually verify funds. And with today's market and thinking about edge all the way out, you can use your mobile phone to deposit paychecks and have them viable the next hour, if you will. And that's an example from a banking perspective that's caused us to push everything a little further to that edge or fog computing type architecture.
Martin, from your perspective, do you have this sort of distributed architecture at all?
Not really. Most of our stuff is done in the core, if you think about doing right. Video processing and such things. And I'd also challenge with the idea that this is new. I mean, your example of the banks, so it's an interesting one. Back 30 years ago, I was working on Cashpoint, and a certain amount of Cashpoint processing, that's ATMs for anybody who doesn't know, was done locally, because you'd have offline and online days. And sometimes if a Cashpoint was offline, it would still give you money. It still authenticate. It knew how to authenticate. It just couldn't do a live balance check. So there's always been a certain amount of it. I think when we start talking about IoT and edge, I think a lot of this is not transactional, but streaming data a lot of the time. So it's things which happen constantly, maybe pictures, or it could be things from, as you said, from autonomous cars. It's the sheer volume of the data. It's not atomic transactions a lot of the time.
So that leads us on to the next discussion point, and that's why bother doing it? And you've just mentioned, Martin, you've just mentioned a very interesting one, the fact that it's very much stream data and large volumes of it. So, Scott, why process on the edge at all?
Well, yeah, so if you think about it, we went from, and as you mentioned, Martin, you know, going from a single simple transaction at an ATM type of thing versus streaming and large data sets of streaming. So if you have yesteryear, you had 720p, now we're talking HD 4K, and instead of having five cameras around, you've got 100 cameras around. And the idea being you're ingesting ingesting so much more data that your ability to process that data real time becomes challenged if you're trying to send it to some centralized location. But if you can process it at the edge and then only upload the relevant information, you're saving bandwidth and you're communicating more efficient data faster.
You're saying there, to a certain degree, it saves you bandwidth. And now I can see that. But then again, you know, if you've got a big enough network and you've got a wide enough distributed network, you might say, well, the network might not be the issue. But it sounds to me like you've just highlighted what I would think would be quite an important part here. And that's that real-time nature, that ability to make decisions and do things and even pre-process that stuff before you decide to send it into the core. So can you give us an example of what that might be? Because I think with a lot of this stuff, it's very easy to talk about things like sensors and cameras and stuff. What would be a sort of concrete example?
Well, a really interesting one, and not to play the devil's advocate here, but just more of the safety feature side of things, is think about all of the airplanes that travel through the air today. You know, think about Heathrow, for example, and how many airplanes land and take off on an hourly or even minute basis. Each one of those has thousands of sensors that are generating data, and they offload a cartridge of storage off of the plane just like they do a piece of luggage. They plug it into some network-attached platform. It offloads that data, runs an analytic on it, and says yes or no, the plane's in good shape or not. But there's no chance for that data to be analyzed real-time and sent back to the plane in time for it to not make its next takeoff, because it's literally, we're flipping planes every 30 minutes, and it takes more time than that to simply read all that data, analyze it on some centralized location, and send it back. But if you're able to process quote-unquote at the edge of every individual airplane that's flying, as you offload that storage cartridge, you plug it in, you get a simple green light, red light instantaneously because that data has been processed locally. And then you can do the deeper analysis later, but you have the ability to turn that plane around instantaneously and be happy to know that it's good to go in the air.
Okay, so let's just touch on that a bit more, because you've come up with a great example, and that's one maybe we can focus on. So not to put you on the spot, but what sort of processing could they do in that instance that could be distributed out to the plane itself that isn't done in the core? What, you know, how much could they actually genuinely do?
So depending on the type of edge-focused compute you have out there and how centralized the process is, if the storage is able to do it intelligently like some of the products that I work on, or if you look at it from just building an IoT gateway box that has some more intelligence, you can run an analytic application that says analyze all of this data, look for certain flags, use AI to throw that fancy buzz term out there, to look through a data stream and say, is there an anomaly? And so your green light is there's no anomalies. Your red light is something looks wrong. And it doesn't say what looks wrong. It just says something looks wrong. So then you still have to go do the deeper analytics on it once you get the raw data offline and put it into a more powerful processing system. But you can at least do the, here's a baseline, here's something that looks out of place, let's go look at it.
I was going to say, that's interesting. So basically it's a first pass. There's an anomaly. I'm not sure what it is. This needs to be processed somewhere else, which I think that was what I was wondering about. Some of these analyses of these large data sets, I just can't see with the current compute how we could do the deep level. But if we're saying we're just spotting anomalies, that's a very interesting use case.
Right, exactly. Minimize what you have to look at as well, because you're going to say the anomalies within this range of data. Instead of looking at terabytes of data to look for that anomaly in real time, all you have to do is say, I only found 1 gigabyte of data that looks funky. Let's go look at that 1 gigabyte data. So you've now isolated it and provided a smaller data subset that has to be go and have that deeper access looking at it. And it all comes down to the amount of compute capability that exists in those edge footprints and how you implement that.
I can see that. So I can think maybe you're looking at engine temperature, and the engine temperature doesn't follow the normal curve. And I guess if you see something that is anomalous in that, that flags something up that says you need to go off and look at something. I guess that's the sort of thing we're talking about.
Exactly. Another flip of that is your car. So we all get the check engine light once in a while, but we have to quote unquote take it to the dealer to read the error codes. All we're doing is saying, let's at the edge, let's flip on the engine light. And then we let the quote unquote specialist take a look at it when you drop it off at the station, kind of thing.
Let's move on and think a bit more about how this might be implemented, because I guess there's many form factors. So I guess you could have very small devices, you could have very large devices. I guess if you're in an edge environment where you can deploy servers, I guess you deploy servers as well. What, you know, is it a mixture of different technologies?
I definitely think that it is a mixture of different technologies. One of the other big things you have to look at from an edge perspective, depending on how mobile the edge device is that you're looking at, is the amount of power available to that product as well. So not only are you going to be necessarily limited by physical space, i.e. server footprint versus micro PC, all the way down to Raspberry Pi type footprint, but how much power can be supplied in a continuous fashion to be able to actually take care of that at that footprint.
Because my initial thought when I hear all these sort of ideas is I think of the Raspberry Pi type solution. But then again, I've got a friend who works in the sensor industry. So he supplies sensors to large organizations like water companies where they have to manage the flow through pipes or all sorts of different things. And they collect that data and I think then they do processing with it. Now, he would be a good example of somewhere where probably a lot of those recording devices are quite small because they're put next to, you know, a pipe or a tube or an inlet or a valve or something like that. But I guess it doesn't always have to be like that.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be that far out too. There's going to be some kind of localization around that as well. So if you're talking to something that are those small, that sensor, those are connected to a device on the corner of the street or the corner in a neighborhood. And then in that localized corner box would be the point where you would add the more real-time analysis because you're not going to be able to put it on every individual sensor. You're still going to have a place to put a mass amount of data. It's a matter of where you pick that first hop and how much data comes off the first hop versus the second hop versus the third hop from the quote-unquote fog to the edge back to the cloud, if you will.
Right. Well done, because that was about where I was about to lead next, this whole idea of fog computing. And is that what we're referring to typically when we say fog? Like a network of devices, all of which have storage capacity, some of which might have compute capacity, all talking to each other and sharing that data.
Exactly. And that's kind of where the Open Fog Consortium came around and the guys. And if you think about the founding fathers of the quote unquote term fog, it's some networking guys with a couple of storage guys with a couple other folks. So yeah, it's all of these smaller devices that are then talking to one another. So you can almost use the Amazon Alexa type of thing. You have the Home Alexa and then you have all the little dots and all the dots don't do anything independently. They all talk through the main Alexa app, if you will. So that's even a perfect example of a home-based fog to cloud type of analogy, if you will.
So the interesting thing for me is what you do with the data and how you curate that data and how long we keep it. Because even the bulk of the data may at first glance be very uninteresting, but we do know as you start to examine large amounts of data, you can see interesting trends. And even within very boring data, there's often interesting things which people want to know about. So if we've got very small devices, obviously they're going to have very limited storage capacity. So do we have edge devices, which are just pure storage devices, which the sensors talk to and they write that? Because if you, as you take your example, Chris, where you've got sensors on a pipe, they're not going to have very much capacity at all. So they need to get it back somehow very, very quickly to somewhere which can store it. Because depending on the resolution of the data you're collecting, it may equate to petabytes even. I mean, I know Hitachi in the past have spoken about the amount of data they can collect from a train, which is a huge amount of data per train journey. So where does it get stored? How long do we store it? And then how do we get it back into the core?
Yeah, precisely. And to your point, Martin, the concept would not necessarily be, we're not saying discard data using these concepts. It's a matter of transmitting the relevant information real time. And then when the system or the platform is in a quote unquote down state, that's when you would then mass move the information. So you can think of all the different platforms we've created out there for the glacier, the snowball, those types of designs that are designed solely for large data ingest for, you know, potential archive and relook at some other time. But the idea here would be to talk and focus around getting the valuable data out as soon as possible and then doing the backup when the system has the freedom to do that backup. So to your point about a train, you're going to collect all this data and it'd be nice to have real-time data on the track system as the train's running over it. But then once the train pulls into the station or goes out of service, goes offline for the night, whatever that case may be, there's always a point of rest where you can then dump that larger data set.
Yeah, so you can analyze it at a later date. Exactly. It's interesting you mentioned that the edge computing device you took from consumer is Alexa, and there's always this long-running worry about Alexa, but it's recording you all the time, and it could quite happily upload all this data. So we quickly drift into privacy issues with things like Alexa. Just, it was an interesting example for you to have picked.
It seems relevant sometimes to poke at the things that people are all like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with that kind of information? So.
But that's true because, you know, let's go and talk about some of those challenges and let's pick security as the first one because, first of all, you know, there's a privacy angle, there's a security angle that those devices, if they're not locked down, not secured, could be accessed, they could be stolen. There's more risk involved in other people getting to that data that you don't want them to compared to stuff that's in your own data center, I would say. So are there any industry standards that are looking to try and address that, or are we just relying on typical techniques of encryption?
As far as I know today, I know there are some cybersecurity efforts being driven around trying to come up with new methods and new standardization for it. But today, the primary focus is, you know, your AES or your TCG type of implementation, because they're standard. Everybody likes them. And in the most cases, like the U.S. government signs off on them. There are opportunities there, especially when you look at doing at the edge, for example. If you're going to have a whole bunch of devices that are managed by a cloud somewhere else, that key that's involved is going to be transmitted in some way, shape, or form, unless you find a way to localize that key management. And that's one of the things that stuff like this computational storage market space is looking at, is a way to ensure that anything that would be related to unlocking something in the way of the key management is maintained within the storage or within that localized device to prevent that level of quote unquote hacking or breaking the internet type of aspects of things that people like to talk about.
So that seems to be something you would want to be very careful about, that as you choose your device or your architecture, that you can actually manage that security, never mind have that security. You know, the key management piece alone, when you've got tens of thousands of devices, would be very, very hard indeed.
Absolutely.
I was thinking back, actually, Martin, can you remember what the banks used to do or what they do now? Because I remember a long time ago when I worked for an organization that was related to banks called FBOS, we had a room that had all the keys that matched all of the terminals. And if you swapped a terminal, then you had to get a new key. And this room had basically a hair trigger. So if you walked in and touched anything, you touched any device, it wiped itself and all the keys that it held were gone. I wonder whether we have to go back to that type of solution again.
So I've seen similar solutions, even today, where you have machines which are key management systems, which are in secure racks, so they're tamper-proof. So you have tamper-proof systems to ensure there's no physical access, so you can't steal the keys. Logical access is probably potentially more of a problem, I think, sometimes than physical access. But certainly when we were talking about key management back in the bank's days, nobody really cared about the network access. They're probably more worried about somebody wandering and walking out with the keys as opposed to somebody hacking in. But yeah, I mean, the key management thing is important. And certainly when we start talking about sensor data, it's not just the stealing of the data, it's the tampering with that data, which I think is one of the big challenges for sensor data.
Both from sitting in line and tapping it, and I guess from corrupting it, changing it.
Yeah, you could hide all kinds of events, and there would be financial gain in doing so, or hiding when things have gone wrong. As we know, it's always the thing where you have a tragedy of an airplane goes down and finding the black box. It's a very similar situation. If a black box goes missing, there's always some kind of conspiracy theory. If you're suddenly all your sensor data, which you were streaming back to the core, was corrupt, there would be another mass conspiracy theory about somebody doing something.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the James Bond, where they were using the satellites to redirect platforms where everybody thought it was good, but it was actually not, type of thing. So I totally see that point. And being able to find ways to provide that level of security while still allowing that level of oversight that you're looking for is definitely kind of one of the challenges that do exist in the fog and cloud computing type of edge environments. So that it's definitely a lot of focus on that. I know quite a few people in the cybersecurity space that are working on ways of implementing new methods of handling this compute at the edge perspective of data.
Let's move on to think about the idea of two things, really. Performance, in the sense that some of these devices could be lower powered, and the actual type of code that we might run on them. What sort of things are we typically going to see being run on these sort of devices, Scott?
It's going to be things like, you'll have, if you're talking about sensor arrays that are bringing in bits and bytes, you're going to be doing things like search algorithms that are going to go through those data stripes looking for, as we mentioned earlier, kind of the anomalies. You have camera arrays that are bringing in images, so then you have image similarity type searches or object tracking type of applications that are going to need to be able to run more real time. So think about a 50 camera array that's going to track somebody walking around a football stadium, pick it being European football or American football, and you want to be able to follow one person. Historically, you had to have all those camera feeds come into a localized bank of TVs on the wall, and somebody's going to say, oh, I saw them here at this timestamp, switch to this camera at that timestamp, da-da-da-da. With the AI and edge algorithms that we have, you get one screen, and it automatically tracks that image across all those different cameras all the way around.
Great example. That's a really good one. I like that one. So, because it gives me an opportunity to ask awkward questions. So looking at that as an example, surely if you're tracking, say, an individual, you need to be able to push some sort of fingerprint of that individual to that device. So there must be a certain degree of dynamically needing to continuously push code to these devices. And that must somehow be managed by some sort of protocol or some sort of control. Again, security as well as that dynamic side of things.
Yeah. And so if you look at it in a traditional storage architecture of today, yes, there's always some kind of code that's being managed to update that, because your incoming streams versus your outgoing data are always going to be overlapping. But if you look at this kind of concept of intelligent storage, where we're starting to be able to push code into a drive, into a storage device and let the storage manage it itself. You've got a full-fledged OS talking to a full-fledged OS, and that becomes somewhat of a seamless architecture as you look at kind of migrating to these new types of technologies that we're looking at today.
Okay, but to do that, I have to still somehow have some sort of protocol or way of doing that. So are you saying that these devices, just like, for instance, the ones you sell, do they just look like a standard device? Do you go through a host that they plug into in order to achieve that? Because I can see there being issues there of managing that to make sure everything's running the right level of code or the latest thing you're looking to check.
Exactly. And there are multiple companies that are in the space today of doing these intelligent devices. Some of them migrate things by doing kernel and taking over more of a host level interaction with the storage. So while it is a storage device, it's really more of a CPU managed platform versus just a standard storage device. You have other folks that are doing accelerators in this space. So it looks like a drive to the host system, but it's really an acceleration factor, kind of like putting a DRAM into a PCIe bus, like that has existed in previous versions, but with just a little more oomph. And then you have your IAMA drive, but I can also do things a little smarter. And those things would be then managed by a single host agent that would talk to all the different storage devices involved and be able to update those things real time, because you've got a software layer on top of that hardware solution. So it's still a software hardware mix. So it's not quite software defined storage as we look at it today, but it's a software enabled hardware.
And are there any standards for how that code is managed across those devices? You know, so imagine the idea of, say, software-defined networking, where we know in software-defined networking, we could actually set the definition or the policy and push it out to all of our switches. Is there an equivalent sort of thing?
Actually, right now, there is not. Again, there's only a few companies that have really taken this on as a full-fledged architectural direction change. And in the case of companies like myself, most of us are in a startup phase, a couple rounds of funding, and getting the market started. But one thing is for sure, since the companies that are out doing this are all looking at different market segments within this need, we've actually joined forces and are starting to work towards building a quote-unquote computational storage working group that would help find some standard ways of interacting with these devices, because there are so many different needs and so many different spaces around it, whether you talk database management, acceleration, AI, machine learning, and then how they apply to data center versus edge, that having us all work together to make those standards helps, and customers like yourselves and all the people listening, ability to implement these things without having to go, oh gosh, I got to go buy a sole source solution.
We'll hit the point that everybody gets to when they're a storage person, and that's worrying about data loss. Now, the implication here is that we will potentially keep data in these devices for an extended period. It's not all going to get streamed up, but so we are going to keep it. How do we think about things like the concept of data protection? Clearly, devices can fail, so an obvious thing would be to put simple redundancy in there. But if these devices are computing as well as storing, that sounds like that makes that a little more complex to achieve.
I definitely agree with you. And there are lots of questions that do come up like that when you talk about putting compute closer to storage like that. But if you think about even at a data center level, say for some crazy reason, you have this data center running a massive amount of computation on data that's stored in that compute node, and the node goes down, power outage, UPS loss, all that kind of stuff. The data itself is still there. Anything that's been in the DRAM or in the CPU space is flushed, and you have to basically start over. You can think of that the same way as basically putting a micro server inside of a storage device. Once the data is in place, the data is not going to get lost or broken or damaged any other way than it would normally get as a standard storage device. You've got your error correction, your wear leveling, your garbage collection, all those things that would take place on your standard data footprint. If you're doing the compute and something really goes wrong, the compute's only looking at the data. It's not manipulating the data in most cases, because you're trying to give a response out to something. You're not trying to migrate and address or manipulate a data set. So when it comes to data protection, you're going to see it as if you were doing it before. And just because you're throwing compute closer to the data doesn't mean you're corrupting the data. It just means that as long as that data is being managed like any other storage device would be today, with, in the case of an SSD, power backup or RAID involved, or ECC, or if you're looking at hard drives, having some kind of RAID across drives implementation, you're safe from that perspective.
You touched on something that made me want to ask you a question about your specific platform. So let's have a couple of minutes talking about your technology very briefly as we come towards the end of our time. And that's really that concept of how the compute on, say, a device like yours and I'll let you describe it in a second, but a computer device like yours would actually be generating some sort of output and how the end user would access that. So maybe if you want to spend a couple of minutes just talking about what your products are, then we can sort of get into the depths of that, because I think that could be interesting.
Absolutely. And like you said, this isn't a product pitch. So from a technology perspective, what we're doing, as you want to move compute closer to data, you still have to know where the data is. So we're building a controller that is able to not only know where the data is being placed within the drive, so your ECC, your garbage collection, your relevant, like a standard, quote unquote, off-the-shelf NVMe SSD, we're sticking next to it these application processors. So you're having two totally independent, basically, CPUs running within a drive. You have your traditional drive architecture, and then you have this compute port horsepower sitting next to it. And that's what we're doing to kind of provide that solution. So anything being run in the compute application space is not creating a storage definition change. You're still storing your zeros and ones just like you would in any other product. We had to build it that way to ensure that when we do run the application processing, we know right where to find that data to be able to pull it out and revive it. So there's that level of technology.
Okay, so if I picked an example of how that might work, it could, for instance, be that this is plugged into a device where all of my stream data is coming in from cameras, sensors, whatever, sits on that SSD type device. Then you've got code which is coming to analyze that at the side, but it's not interfering with the actual protocol of storing that data on the device, but it has got the ability to come in and look at it from the side, if you like. If it produces anything, does it put it back onto that same device so that you can just read it as if it was normal output?
Yeah, so there's in this case, kind of the software piece of what we're doing, or what the marketplace is doing, is there's a host agent that manages the different devices behind it. So your application on the host normally goes looking for an LBA range. And what you do is you have that host application now using an API target our host application, which goes and queries all the different drives. And if it finds something on a drive, it manipulates it and restores it in place so that you're having concurrent processing across however many drives, whether it be one or 48, a single CPU can take advantage of those scalable resources. And that's one of the things that we're all doing in this space to make sure that it's viable, is that you have to be able to scale it as much as you can add this value. Because if you create a bottleneck, you're not solving anything. You're trying to eliminate bottlenecks.
Okay, and you touched on a very good point there, that the architecture of the sort of products that you're developing are a step further away from just simply putting a box with some disks in that's taking a feed from somewhere. This is actually thinking about the issues that are involved in distributing that AI-type computing algorithm and process to those devices, and how would they run in parallel? How would they be efficient at that sort of edge position? If I'm oversimplifying it for you.
No, and thank you for that. That's a very good way to reiterate kind of the deep dive aspect of it. Is it's a scalable compute resource or microservers per drive slot instead of a server per 4U of rack space.
So Scott, in terms of what we might think coming up in the future, how can we expect this market to develop? Where do you think we're going to head? I mean, clearly you've got your own products that you're selling, but where do you think the market's going to go in order to make this actually work in a practical way?
Well, with all kinds of change to different market segments, the big thing is to focus on the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. So we're not going to try to make a monetary, physical, all this type of footprint change to what's existing today. We've got some great new technologies that have come to market with things like NVMe over Fabrics to accelerate flash adoption and the use of flash. As we push it closer to the data and we talk about getting out into the edge and compute, it's a matter of better architecting the existing solutions to manage the data flow more efficiently, not recreating a new architecture. So optimizing CPU workload versus DRAM footprint, especially with the DRAM shortages that are going on in the market today, and then looking how to leverage the right way to put a CPU with a GPU with DRAM and the right kind of storage technology. This isn't a segment or a technology that's going to replace every drive. We're not trying to go anywhere near that. It's further defining a storage architecture to work with all the fun software-defined footprints that we've put out there today.
So if people want to find out more about your company or even you, where can they stalk you? On Twitter perhaps? Or give us a few URLs and Twitter handles and we'll add that into the podcast.
No problem. So the company's website is ngdsystems.com. We're on Twitter at NGD Systems. And then me personally, I'm a very social friendly kind of guy. So LinkedIn, of course, and then my Twitter handle is SM Shadley for those that would like to look after and see what I'm up to.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for your time, Scott. That's been really interesting. That's a great opener for this sort of technology. Be good to get you back again in the future and we'll dig down into something else next time, perhaps.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about implementation specifics and where we see this technology being going forward and being used in the future. So yeah, definitely one for future discussion.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. So as usual, everybody, you can find us at storageunpacked.com. You can find us at Storage Impact on Twitter, and you can find us on LinkedIn by searching for the Storage Impact Group. And thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you next time. Thanks, guys.